It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I am Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. We are a couple weeks into the big league season now. We're going to take a look at some rookies who are off to hot starts. Maybe some that are not off to such hot starts. We'll see. We also have had quite a bit of turnover on our top 100 prospects list. We've had five new additions over the course of the past week. We'll break down each of those guys. We will give you our weekly draft update, which, yes, will include an update on Rocker and Leiter, Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter of Vanderbilt. And we're also going to take a look at five guys on the rise. And we'll wrap up by answering your questions, as we always do, in the mailbag. Jim, Jonathan, always with the caveat when you guys are working on the prospect list, you guys are both buried deep in the top 100, soon to be top 150 draft prospects list. So that is what your focus has been on, but there is baseball underway, and we've had a lot of prospects to watch, a lot of rookies. And last week when we talked about these guys, there were several names that we probably, if you had asked us coming into the season, who are we going to be talking about when we talk about rookies who are off to fast starts, probably would not have topped our list with Badu, Mercedes, McKinstry. Well, Jim, you might have had McKinstry in there. But those guys continue to hit. Badu with another big game. As we're recording this now, he had a big game last night. The Yerminator was the American League Player of the Week. But I think all three of these guys had a little stint of like a couple games where they cooled off, maybe had a couple game hitless spell, but then came back with a big game each of them. So those guys continue to impress. But some other names have popped up that we should talk about. Emmanuel Clase, for one. I know we want to talk about Trevor Rogers, another. Jim, when we were talking about who we were going to talk about today, you were all in on Clase.
Yeah, you know, he's fascinated me. I mean, you know, as everybody who listens to the podcast knows, Jonathan and I each do 10 top 30 lists, and you get to know those players a little bit better than others. And, you know, I had Clase with the Rangers before he came to the Indians, but like his career arc is just so crazy. So, you know, the Padres signed him out of the Dominican Republic in 2015, and it took him 4 years to get to full season ball. And then 4 years to go from high class A to the big leagues. I mean, I'm sorry, 4 months to go from high class A to the big leagues. You know, the Rangers got him in a trade for Brett Nicholas. He was good in the final couple months of the 2019 season. And then he went to the Indians as part of the Corey Kluber trade. Last year, we never saw him because he strained his lat during spring training. He got an 80-game suspension that was later reduced to the entire season after testing positive for performance-enhancing substance. You know, pitched a little bit in Structure League and Dominican Winter League. But he's come back. He's got two saves already, and he's got the crazy fastball. It might be the craziest fastball in the big leagues. He was an upper 80s guy when he signed, mid-90s when the Rangers traded for him, and now he kind of usually ranges from 97 to 102. But even more so than the velocity, he's just got this natural cut and ride that you know, he's throwing 100 miles an hour and the ball's, it's like a wiffle ball. And I mean, I don't know how anybody ever squares that pitch up. They haven't so far, so much this season. He's got a power slider to go with it as well. And I mean, I think this guy is going to succeed as a closer if he throws strikes. You know, that's really the biggest question. I mean, I'm not putting him in the Hall of Fame, but it's almost like Mariano Rivera's cutter. except it's 100 miles an hour. I don't know. You could know that pitch is coming, and I still don't know how you hit it.
So far, Class A in five games, 4 1/3 innings pitched, 2 hits, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts, a couple saves. So he's pitching in high leverage situations, and Jim just put him in the Hall of Fame. You did say you put him in the Hall of Fame, right?
Yes, Class A is the same as Mariano Rivera. That's what I heard too.
That's the headline for today's podcast.
So, someone else with a very interesting career arc and doesn't really fit the strictest definition of prospect. And actually, when we were talking prior to the podcast, we questioned whether he was actually still technically a prospect, still technically had rookie eligibility, is Philip Evans, who's getting some playing time because of an injury to one of the elite prospects in the game, and keep Ryan Hayes. I could have saved this for a Pipeline Pop quiz, but out of respect to Danny Gentile, who's not with us as a producer, but hated the Pipeline Pop quizzes, we will not do it as a Pipeline Pop quiz. But Philip Evans, the last time he was on a top prospects list, 2013, he was number 19 on the Mets top. That might have even been before we expanded to top 30 list. That might have been the Mets top 20 list.
Yeah, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right. And you know, and his story is, you know, I mean, we all love stories like this. It's not anything earth shattering in terms of, you know, but, you know, it was a somewhat later round pick back in 2011. Another big leaguer from that 2011 draft, by the way, who's now being productive, jumped onto their top 20 and, you know, kind of like puttered around in the Mets system for a very long time. Didn't make it to Double A until 2016. Made it up finally for the first time in 2017, hit decently briefly in 2018, kind of looked like a quadruple A super utility type of guy, maybe. And has been, you know, a minor league free agent a few times over, you know, kind of just trying to hang on, really. Went after the 2018 season, signed with the Cubs. After 2019, was free agent again, signed with the Pirates. And then, you know, last year he came up again out of need and was hitting well and then got hurt. You know, lost the opportunity to play. And then, you know, the same thing happened this year where there's just an opportunity to play. And again, he's hitting. And, you know, it's been not a ton of opportunities overall. I mean, he's only got 125 career at-bats, but he's hit 320. You know, I'm beginning to think that maybe Philip Evans is actually not bad. And he can hit a little bit. He can play a bunch of different positions. They've been, you know, he hasn't been filling in for Key Brian Hayes at third base every day as they've moved guys around. But he's been able to play here and there. I think he played center field the other day. You know, I don't know that he's an everyday player, but he's contributing. And this is a team that, you know, needs guys who can do something productive offensively. I think they're going to keep giving him opportunities until, you know, ride out this hot streak for as long as it lasts. And so far he's shown the ability to hit.
Yeah. Speaking of getting opportunities, it's not like he was a, you know, a big bonus guy or first rounder.
Well, he was Jason. He actually got sandwich round money in the 15th
round. Oh, he did.
Round.
Okay.
So he signed for $650. Yeah. He was, anyway, I didn't mean to.
No,
jump yeah, in there, I mean, but he got the equivalent of say, supplemental first round money at the time when they signed him.
Is that $650 in
back in 2011?
Yeah, would be sandwich round money.
Yeah,
and that was the year before. And you know, we've talked about this before, I think, but that was the last year before changes to the draft system and the bonus pools and you know, that was the last year that teams could, you know, do that with impunity.
I was going to say, you know, I think the point probably still stands that he's not a guy who got so much money that the team had so much invested in him that he got, you know, chance after chance after chance. This is a guy who spent 8 years kind of toiling in the minor leagues and then, you know, remaining ready for that opportunity. And Jonathan, you said has been up a few times and is by and large hit when he's been up, but always ready for that opportunity. A couple other guys that have, I was looking at their numbers and was struck by how similar they were between last year and this year. A couple of pitchers, Trevor Rogers and Casey Mize, both, I believe, had 7 starts last year. Looking at Rogers here, 7 games, 7 starts, 6.11 ERA, 28 innings allowed, 32 hits, 13 walks, at a 1.61 ERA. Hitters hit him at a clip of 283. And Casey Mize last year also 7 games, 7 starts, ERA above 6, nearly 7, 6.99. And now this year, Mize in his first 2 outings has allowed, 1 earned run? 1 earned run on 9 hits, 4 walks, 9 strikeouts over 11 innings. And Trevor Rogers, perhaps even more gaudy numbers, at least on the strikeout side, 10 innings pitched, has allowed 5 hits, 6 walks, 16 strikeouts in 10 innings, 3 runs, 2 of them earned. So a couple of guys, especially with Mize, who expected big things in a small sample size and the first time up, didn't fare well, but so far in the early going have looked good this year.
Yeah, you know, and with Mize, even last night, he has struggled with his command and control, which were strong suits, more than I would have expected in the big leagues. I mean, sometimes guys struggle when they first get there, but he has more so than I thought, just because it was so good in college at Auburn. And even this year, you know, he struggled with his command in his first start. And last night, he really battled it for the first 2 innings, and then he got locked in. I still don't quite know what to make of him, because he's not missing quite as many bats as I would have thought. You know, again, it's still very early in his career. He just graduated from the top 100. But last night, I think, was a very positive step, you know, especially from the standpoint of getting off to a slow start with his command and control in the first 2 innings and then righting the ship. So maybe he'll start to become, you know, more of the guy who was the number 1 pick of the draft in 2018. You know, whereas, you know, Trevor Rogers, I've never been the biggest fan of his, just because he's been one of those guys who, you know, he's never had a great breaking ball. I mean, even going back to high school. And so that always concerned me a little bit. Although he's to come up with the cutter that kind of serves as his third pitch and is an effective option. And, you know, he's throwing harder. It's 92, 94 to 97. And he's got a good changeup and he uses his size well. Jonathan, I think he was in your half of the draft when we were doing the draft, you know, because he's from New Mexico. Were you a big Trevor Rogers proponent? I mean, he was also super old for a high school kid, which bothered some teams.
Yeah, I mean, I liked him because of his size and his left-handedness, you know, and he kind of, I want to say, you know, sort of a pop-up guy, although not really. I mean, over the summer prior, he had that's kind of, I guess, where he jumped on the scene, if my memory is correct. You know, as a high school guy from New Mexico, you don't see too many first round guys come from those ranks. But you know, the fastball played, I thought it was, you know, it was a little bit of a reach when he went 13th overall. But that's about where most people had him. I think he would have gone, you know, not that long after. Again, when you have a 6'5 lefty who seemed to be able to throw strikes and had a plus fastball. And you know, I remember what you're saying, Jim, about the breaking ball not being great, but there was some feel there. I think there was hope that it would get better. I think kind of what's, you know, interesting with him is just that he kind of, it took him forever to pitch. He didn't pitch that summer. He made 17 starts the next year. 2019 he pitched a lot, and that was kind of when he really put himself on the map and, you know, pitched his way to double A. But I remember, you know, waiting for him to to make his debut. And I was like, what is going on? He had some minor injuries. And, you know, anytime a young pitcher gets hurt early on and you start and you don't know what's going on, you're worried like, well, is he going to end up needing Tommy John surgery or something else, you know, shoulder surgery. And he finally, you know, finally made 17 starts in that first full year, you know, but, and then we didn't hear from him, a whole lot. And obviously the shutdown, then, you know, last year he made it to the big leagues. It almost, I mean, that took me by surprise because his name had not really come up a whole heck of a lot. And then all of a sudden there he was in the big leagues, and granted he's, you know, he struggled last year, but, for all the talk about him being old as a high schooler, here he is, you know, in the big leagues now pitching very, very well. And he's only 23. So it's been kind of an interesting developmental path for him, as much as it was, you know, him popping up on the scene from a part of the country that you don't see a lot of high school guys, going in the first round.
Yeah, we just hadn't seen much of him in the minor leagues.
Right.
Jonathan, you mentioned 17 starts in his pro debut in 2018, but even at that, he only threw 72 innings across those 17 starts. So just over four innings per start there, and only a total of 209 innings pitched in the minors before making his big league debut last year.
Yeah, and he was old. I mean, for a high school kid, he was 20 and a half when he made his pro debut. Like, which is, I mean, really unusual. That always stuck with me too. But, you know, I think the thing that's helped him is even though he's never come up with a really solid third pitch, you know, breaking ball type of thing, he does throw harder and his fastball, his four seamer plays well off his changeup. So that's been effective for him. I mean, he's got 55 strikeouts and 38 big league innings right now. You know, I think the key for him is he's got to cut the walks. He's been walking a guy every two innings, and to have success as a starter, he's going to have to control, command his stuff better because he does get hit when his location's off.
All right, you're listening to the MLB Pipeline podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. Another group of guys we wanted to talk about that you can all kind of – you can lump them all into sort of the same category, guys who are or were projected to be starters but are currently pitching in a relief role or at least thus far have been relieving for the most part. But Honeywell, Kopech, Crochet, Puck, Weathers, Rodriguez – bunch of guys here, and several of them are guys who are have been held back by injuries and are kind of being eased back in. But guys, an interesting group here, and all these guys have been very good so far this year.
Yeah, I think it's really an interesting way to go, and for each of them, there's stories of why they're where they are, are different. I think we should start with Brent Honeywell just because it has been. Just an unbelievable journey for him, going from sort of, you know, a guy who, you know, he felt that he was overlooked, you know, in the draft. The Rays, you know, took him in the second round back in 2014, jumped on the scene and seemed like one of the better right-handed pitching prospects in all of baseball. And then the injuries really hit, and he didn't throw competitively after the 2017 season until right now. To the point where when I heard that he was getting called up, I did a double take, because he didn't even, you know, he didn't pitch a ton in spring training. I think that, in fact, he only pitched in one game in spring training. So I it was great to see him on the mound, and I said, all right, well, now he can get ready for the minor league season. Here he is in the big leagues. And he was absolutely nasty. Two perfect innings, struck out two, the Rays like to use that opener. I think he can make a huge impact while they really monitor his workload. And I think he's one of those guys, you know, I think these guys are in different boats. You know, some of them are going to be starters eventually. I think he and Michael Kopech are probably the better bets to be relievers long-term. And AJ Puck also, I think, probably stays in the bullpen just because of all the injuries. But I think Garrett Crochet and Ryan Weathers, and then Chris Rodriguez, who's the sort of, you know, not as big a name, but the Angels have long loved this stuff, but he hasn't been able to stay healthy. I think we'll have to wait and see. He's still young enough. He hasn't pitched above A ball before now. But the Honeywell one is the one that really, really sticks out just because of how much time he missed. And, you know, I think there are a lot of us who are wondering whether or not, you know, he was ever going to get there. So I tip my cap to him for putting in the work to getting to the big leagues. And now I think we'll serve an important role on that pitching staff going forward.
It's kind of crazy. I mean, how much they've gone through, but this is the fact that, you know, Honeywell and Kopech are still rookies and we're still talking about them like that in 2021, because I can't remember if we were both at the Fall Stars game in 2016, Jonathan, but you know, they were the two best players in the 2016 Fall Stars game, the Arizona Fall League. Brett Honeywell struck out, I think, five top 100 prospects in two innings. Kopech was repeatedly hitting 100, made Gleyber Torres look really bad with his fastball. And then you fast forward to next year, 2017, they were probably the two best players at the Futures game that year. And dominated there. And here we are 4 years later, still talking about him. I'm going to be really curious to see what the White Sox do with both Kopech and Crochet. I mean, I think those guys are kind of in the same situation that Ryan Weathers is in that they're on teams that are, you know, all in to get to the World Series this year, one out, added starting pitching in the offseason, so they had fewer rotation openings. But I think both those White Sox guys and Ryan Weathers, I think, are still viewed as long-term starters. You know, like you said, you know, Honeywell, can you really count on him? You know, that open role might be perfect for him. I really respect AJ Puck as a prospect, but I mean, at some point, I think you got to say he hasn't thrown consistent strikes and he hasn't stayed consistently healthy. Let's just put him in the pen. You know, Chris Rodriguez is younger, so maybe he could move. But I'll be curious to see, because while I think that is in the plans for the two White Sox guys and Weathers, it's also not something you can really do in the middle of the season. You know, you can't just say, hey, flip a switch, now you're a starter, because you got to build the guy's arm back up. I mean, that's more, you know, off-season work and spring training. But I'll be very curious to see, you know, with all three of those guys, are they starters next year? You know, do the White Sox do that with two guys? You know, what if these guys are all spectacular in the bullpen? Do you mess with a good thing? I'll be really curious to see how that goes forward. But I do think those three guys, especially in the playoffs, could be great weapons, because they could give you two or three innings, you know, if you need them. And they all are terrific, terrific pitching prospects.
Jim, you were talking about how good these guys were in the Fall Stars game in 2016, Futures game 2017. And we were recently looking back at, I sent you guys this, our list of the top 10 right-handed pitching prospects from 2017. This is quite a list. Alex Reyes was at the top of it. Tyler Glasnow, Lucas Giolito, Kopech, Francis Martes, Anderson Espinoza, Honeywell, Jose De Leon, Jeff Hoffman, and Ronaldo Lopez. So some serious time missed. I think if you just take a glance at that list, probably the first thing that jumps out at you is just how much time a bulk of those guys missed.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the nature. I mean, that's what always makes it tough when we're doing these lists, is you can't ignore pitchers, but they get hurt. And, you know, baseball, you know, and teams have spent hours and hours and hours to try to keep pitchers healthy. And when I started in this business, it wasn't uncommon to see minor league pitchers pitch, you know, like real prospects pitch 180 plus innings a season. And now we've gone in the other direction where, you know, workloads and pitch counts are carefully managed. And guys don't stay healthy. I mean, personally, I feel, you know, guys are throwing harder and that leads to more injuries too. But I mean, it just feels like it's kind of random almost. I mean, I'm sure Jonathan can say the same thing, but I mean, over the years, I've seen guys with great deliveries not stay healthy. And I've seen guys with terrible deliveries, you know, like Max Scherzer always jumps to mind. Like, he had this tremendous head whack when I first saw him in the Fall League right after he signed. And he's, you know, I don't think he's ever really had an arm injury. He had a finger injury, but he's stayed healthy. So it's just the nature of pitching. I mean, we talk about Hunter Green, Jonathan. I mean, that guy generates probably the most effortless 100-mile-an-hour fastballs, and he's super athletic. And he blew out, you know, pretty quick into his pro career. It's pitching's tough.
All right, before we go to a break, one thing I wanted you guys to do quickly, and Jonathan, you kind of started to group these guys before, but I wanted you to rank this group of six pitchers that we're talking about: Honeywell, Kopech, Crochet, Puck, Weathers, Rodriguez, from most likely to start long-term to least likely.
All right, I'll say Weathers is most likely to start, followed by Crochet, then Rodriguez, then Kopech, then Puck, then Honeywell.
I would be very similar to that. I would go Weathers, Crochet. I would go Kopech third. Rodriguez and Honeywell would be 4-5. And Puck would be the clear six. I mean, yeah. We're nitpicking there at the end. I mean, I think we have them in roughly the same orders there. And I agree, Weathers and Crochet would be the top two easily.
All right. When we come back, we're going to look at the newest additions to our top 100 prospects list. That's coming up next on the MLB Pipeline podcast.
Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually, we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo. Or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/MLB and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/MLB today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. Roman is the official partner of Major League Baseball. That's GetRoman.com/MLB. GetRoman.com/MLB.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. Last week on the show, we talked about the new additions to the top 100 prospects. There were several of them, and there are several more this week. In just the week that's transpired since our last podcast episode, we've had five players graduate from the top 100 prospects list. That was Dylan Carlson of the Cardinals, Nick Madrigal of the White Sox, Aurandy Rosarena of the Rays, Tristan McKenzie of the Indians, and Ian Anderson of the Braves. Those five players were replaced in this order by Ivan Herrera of the Cardinals, Michael Busch of the Dodgers, Tyler Soderstrom of the A's, Noelvi Marte of the Mariners, and Jonathan India of the Reds. Jim, we're going to give you the first two players on this list. Ivan Herrera, Cardinals catcher, who I know when we tweeted out news of him entering the top 100 prospects list, we saw some Baby Yachty replies, a not unfamiliar refrain. Tell us a little bit about Herrera.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if, real quick, Jonathan, did you get any emails from Canada or tweets from Canada angry that we did not add Alejandro Kirk?
Yeah, stop baiting me like that. No, actually, I did not.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm glad the Canada is leaving you alone. It, you know, Herrera's interesting, although, I mean, he's the latest catching prospect who's got to wonder if Yadier Molina is ever going to stop playing for the Cardinals. The good news for Herrera, he's only 20, so I think he can kind of wait Yadi out. He might actually be the Cardinals catching prospect who actually takes over for Yadi, like, you know, probably 2030 at this point. But, no, I mean, he's super interesting. He's one of a number of guys I think would have had a lot higher profile had we had a 2020 season, because he was very good as an 18-year-old in the Midwest League in 2019. Low Class A, that's one of the hardest places to hit. And what I like about Herrera is that, you know, like a lot of times with the catching prospects, you have an offensive guy and you wonder if he's going to stay behind the plate, or you have a defensive guy and you wonder if he's going to hit. I mean, the extreme, I don't know why these guys popped in my head, you know, like a Jake Rogers with the Tigers, who's a defensive-minded guy, or Zach Collins with the White Sox, who has power but was shaky behind the plate. But, you know, Herrera's a legit all-around guy. You know, he's he's a hit over power guy, but there's power there. There could be more power to come. You know, he doesn't try to do too much at the plate. He's got control of the strike zone, uses the whole field. Just good approach for a young guy, that hasn't had any problems with breaking balls. So you feel real good about the bat. And, he's going to stay behind the plate. He's got, he's a good receiver. His blocking improved. He actually worked with Molina to help him. Why wouldn't you learn from Molina if you had that chance? He's got solid arm strength, that's improved, in pro ball. He's, worked hard on learning English early in his career. So he's bilingual, which helps communicate with pitchers who obviously speak different languages. Just really impressive guy. And even though he's been in pro ball, he signed in 2016, he's still only 20. So I just think there's a ton of upside with this guy. And then, number two, the second replacement, Michael Busch with the Dodgers, we've talked about him some on the podcast last fall. He might have, if you surveyed all the scouts who attended Instructional League, Busch would be up there with the most impressive hitters that scouts saw on other teams. And, this is a guy who was a first round pick in 2019. I think at that time, if you were listing his strong suits, he was one of the more complete offensive players in that draft. He has a very polished approach. He draws walks. He uses the whole field. He controls the strike zone. There's power too. There's hit, there's power, there's on base. I mean, this guy's going to be a really good offensive player. And the question when the Dodgers drafted him in 19 was, where are you going to play this guy? He played a lot of first base at North Carolina, played some left field in the Cape. He got some time at second. I think he's taking ground balls at third. And the Dodgers actually announced him at the most difficult of those positions, second base. And, he's, probably a slightly below average runner. He was a three-sport athlete as a Minnesota high schooler. So he's, 6'1", 210, but he's a little bit more athletic than that build might indicate. But people who saw him last fall in Instructional League were just amazed at how much improvement he'd made with his athleticism and quickness and even his arm strength a little bit. And went from, I think the best word to describe how other teams thought of him as a second baseman would have been skeptical. And now I think, teams are saying, look, he's got a shot. He could be that Max Muncy type of second baseman where positioning plays in. And he's a better all-around hitter, than Max Muncy. So, this is yet another example of the Dodgers taking a guy and helping him get better. And we really haven't seen a whole lot of him. He had 24 at-bats in his debut before he had a minor injury, and we got to see him a little bit in the Arizona Fall League. But, he's a guy who played in 2019, and he's got 24 official minor league at-bats to his credit at this point. So I think he's a guy who could shoot up this list as he gets going this year.
Jim, circling back quickly to Herrera, you were mentioning might be the Cardinals catching prospect to finally take over from Yadi, and I think you were probably largely referring to Carson Kelly, who was on the Cardinals' top 30 prospects list for 6 straight years. He was ranked among their top 10 prospects for the most part. He ended up rising to being their number 2 prospect behind Alex Reyes in 2017, number 3 in 2018 behind Reyes and Flaherty. Was finally dealt when it was apparent that Yadi was never going to retire. And then, even after that, I don't think there was that heir apparent component to this. But then Kisner kind of came out of nowhere and was the Cardinals' number 3 prospect in 2019 and number 6 in 2020. And now the torch has been handed to Herrera as that catcher in waiting in perpetuity. So, Jonathan, next up on the top 100 prospects list, you're going to tell us about Tyler Soderstrom, Noelvi Marte, and Jonathan Indian. Kind of an interesting dichotomy here. We've got a couple of 19-year-olds and then a 24-year-old who is already in the big leagues. And I think it's fair to say off to a surprisingly good start.
Yeah, a healthy start. But I'll start with Soderstrom, who, unlike Herrera, the jury is out. About whether he sticks behind the plate. It's interesting with Soderstrom and Marte. Soderstrom's yet to play a professional game because 2020. And Marte's yet to play a game in the United States. Under normal circumstances, they may have both played their way on. And Soderstrom was a guy who was one of the best pure hitters among the high school set in the 2020 draft, and could have gone somewhere in the middle of the first round, ended up going number 26 overall, but the A's went well over slot to sign him for $3.3 million. And then he went to the alternate site as a high schooler. His dad, Steve Soderstrom, pitched in the big leagues for quite some time. And so he's got that sort of feel for the game that we often come to expect from sons of big leaguers. He can really, really hit. I mean, the strike zone knowledge is unbelievable. He can drive the ball to all fields. There's no question he's going to hit. I think whether he sticks behind the plate remains to be seen. The A's like the strides he made. He's very athletic. So this is not a guy where if he moves out from behind the plate, you're like, oh, where can we hide him? He could probably play third. He could play an outfield corner and would be fine there. He did both of those things on the showcase circuit the summer before, and he'd be perfectly fine. The bat's going to play. So I think the question will be is, will the catching development hold back his bat getting him to the big leagues? Because I think he's going to hit his way quickly up their system. It's going to be fun to see how he hits this year. Marte is a guy, again, had there been a regular 2020, probably would have played full season ball last year. I think he was the kind of guy that could have jumped from the DSL to full season ball, even if he went there a little bit late, and he probably would have hit his way on already. Again, another guy, a guy with a tremendous offensive upside. He has a chance to hit for average and power when all is said and done. As you pointed out, Jason, he's still only 19, and he's going to be 19 for the entirety of this season. He was at the alternate site last year and held his own. Question with him about whether or not he plays shortstop. I think he probably slows down. The good news is I think he's going to have the profile for third. If that's where they decide to move him over, I think they'll let him play his way off of short for now. He's committed to his throwing. We'll see how that goes, but the offense, there's a lot to like. And then Jonathan India, the last guy, and you mentioned that he's in the big leagues already, and this is sort of a nod to him performing kind of like everyone thought or hoped he would as the number five pick in the 2018 draft. Kind of an interesting guy because prior to that, I mean, he was a known quantity in high school. He went to Florida, was okay, but didn't do anything much. And then his draft year just completely went off, especially in terms of power. And that jumped him up to number five overall. And that wasn't like that was a reach. That was about where he was going to go. And then he spent most of his first full season hurt with a nagging wrist injury. To his credit, he tried to play through it, made it to Double A. We saw him in the fall. He did not perform well there. And all along, the Reds kind of said, well, he was playing with this nagging wrist injury. And you're like, well, how much of that's true? All reports were that he performed well at the alternate site last year, but none of us saw that. So we didn't know exactly what to expect, coming into this year. And then he went out and was absolutely ridiculous in the Arizona Fall League. I'm sorry, in spring training this year. And then won the job. He's their second baseman this year. Is off to a really good start. 11 runs batted in 9 games, hitting .355. He hasn't hit a homer yet, but that's going to come. He's got a couple of extra base hits, but I think he's settling in and looking much like the guy everyone thought he might be when he was a top 10 pick 3 years ago.
So the addition of Noelvi Marte to the top 100 prospects list gives the Mariners 7 top 100 prospects. And I can tell you that Mariners fans are in love with this kid. We got a lot of it's about time, and he should have been on there already when Marte entered the top 100 prospects list.
Because they went to the Dominican and watched him play.
Well, we got a lot of tweets. I mean, at some point, Jonathan, for the inbox and even non-inbox questions, we got that question a lot. How far is Noelvi Marte away from the top 100? When is Noelvi Marte going to be on the top 100? So I'm not surprised that the Mariners do love their Nuelve Marte.
And then on India, he and Tyler Stevenson both off to good starts this year. I was looking at the overall statistics for top 100 prospects who are currently in the big leagues. And overall, top 100 hitters have struggled so far, have a slash line of 200, 314, 342, a 656 OPS, 69 strikeouts, and 190 at bats. But India and Stevenson combined 372, 408, 512 with a 920 OPS. You take those guys out of the equation and the top 100 hitters, the other eight current top 100 prospects who are in the big leagues have a slash line of 150, 288, 293. And that's kind of a stark contrast from the top 100 pitchers. Those guys have been very good. Combined, they've thrown 13 games, 3-1 with a save, 36 innings pitched, only 18 hits allowed and 11 walks, a whip of 0.81 and a combined ERA of 1.75 and 12 strikeouts per nine innings for those top 100 pitchers, which includes Kopech, Crochet, Ryan Weathers, three guys we've talked about at length already today. Also Dane Dunning, who's been very good, and Tristan McKenzie. All right. When we come back, we're going to talk draft. That's coming up next here on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
This past year has shown us that without your health, you have nothing. If you're not well, you can't work, look after yourself, or take care of your family. You can't enjoy the life you've worked so hard to build. That's why you need to prioritize taking care of your long-term health today, before it goes from good to bad to worse. So invest in your long-term health with Forward. Forward is intelligent medicine with a personal touch. Their doctors are dedicated to catching top killers like cancer and heart disease early, before it's too late. And catching them early could save you tens of thousands of dollars in the long run. Everyone's health history is different, which is why Forward doctors personalize a health plan with you, based on your genetics, lifestyle, and biometrics to achieve long-term results and ensure nothing gets missed. It's time to invest in a doctor that's invested in you. Go to GoForward.com today to protect your future health. That's GoForward.com. GoForward.com.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo, and Jason Ratliff here, and it's time to talk a little bit about the 2021 draft, and as we always do, we have to give you an update on the Vanderbilt duo of Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter, who, since we last spoke, faced the Georgia Bulldogs and did not fare quite as well as they have. I mean, I guess Leiter was very, very good again. Rocker ran into trouble for the first time this year. He got hit to the tune of five innings pitched, seven hits, six runs, six earned, two walks, 12 strikeouts, and was dinged up for three home runs. This is a guy who, to that point, had only allowed four earned runs over the course of 43 innings. So his ERA ballooned to 1.88.
It's over.
And Leiter came back the next night, and it's kind of funny because we were like, are we going to talk about these guys again? They weren't that good.
Well, and then, Jack was pretty good.
Yeah, Leiter, seven innings, one run, three hits, three walks, 13 strikeouts. But Rocker, I thought it was pretty interesting. First inning, single, walk, home run, double, first four hitters, and then proceeded to strike out the next three batters. And then over the course of the next four innings was kind of the Rocker of old. Four innings pitched, one hit, one walk, no runs, and nine strikeouts. Struck outside, I believe, in the fifth. And then in the sixth inning, home run, single, home run, and got yanked. And Jim, I know you said you were on the phone with a scout at the time and not paying particularly close attention to this game. But is this cause for concern with Rocker?
I mean, I wouldn't say cause for concern. I mean, it's crazy. This is the first time all year that neither of those guys earned a win in a start. They'd won their first seven starts. I mean, Rocker's velocity was down like 90, 92 the previous two starts, and he still managed to pitch well. I don't know what the velocity was in this game. He did have the 12 strikeouts in five innings, gets a lot of strikeouts on sliders. I didn't get to see the breakdown of what happened. I mean, I think this game, the issue was command. I mean, even Tim Corbin, I read a game story where he alluded to that. You know, I think Rocker threw 24 pitches before he got out. He threw 100 pitches in five plus innings. Even though he struck out 12, Georgia hit 700 off him when they put the ball in play, including three home runs. I mean, he's good. We've said this, you know, like he's both very good and very hyped. He's not a guy who I think fans think he's this, you know, fire breathing monster who throws 93, 96 and hits 99 every time out. And that has not been him. That's not been what he's done recently. And then I think this game showed, even though he had bat missing stuff, if he doesn't command it, he gets hit. So I wouldn't say cause for concern. You know, I do think, you know, we have our draft top 150 will be coming out next week, and we haven't, you know, finalized, you know, where guys are going to rank. I think it's safe to say Kumar won't be number one, which is where he came into the season, but he still would go in the top 5 or 10 picks. He's still going to go good. But, you know, like with any of these guys, they're going to be under the microscope for the next, we got 3 months until the draft. And, you know, if you're going to take a guy in the top 5 picks, you're going to scrutinize them very carefully, and there have been some questions that have arisen with the velocity being down for a couple starts, and then the command in this one. Teams are looking at that stuff pretty carefully.
And Leiter, as mentioned, 7 innings, 1 earned run, 13 strikeouts. He is now 7-0 on the season, 0.55 ERA, 0.082 average against, 84 strikeouts against 19 walks in 49 innings. And if Rocker is vacating that number one spot on the top 150 list, I think we have a pretty good candidate to fill that
Vanderbilt
spot.
Vanderbilt might hold on to that number one spot. Even if it's not cool. No, I mean, you know, Leiter, it's funny, you know, as a, you know, Georgia grad, I felt like the Bulldogs were playing with house money after they won 14-2, which has to be Vanderbilt's worst home loss in forever. And they actually battled Jack Leiter. You know, pretty, I feel like one run's kind of the over, you know, like, you know, and they were in it. Ryan Webb, who's probably going to be about a third round pick, actually matched him strikeout for strikeout, 13 and 6 innings before Vanderbilt got to Georgia's bullpen. But I did watch more of that game, and it was, you know, vintage Jack Leiter. You just cannot hit his fastball when he can throw the fastball by you in the zone whenever he wants. And he did that. And, you know, he walked three guys. I mean, if you want to nitpick, you know, the control is probably the thing he needs to shore up the most. But, you know, he looked really, really good. You know, Georgia, you know, scored a run off of him. And Georgia had an opportunity with second and third, one inning, to maybe do something, and didn't. And that was kind of it. You know, they looked – I mean, Jack Leiter, you know, has looked good every time out. So, you know, kind of more of the same for him, really.
All right. And now we move on to our segment on guys not named Rocker and Leiter. This week we're going to talk about five guys on the rise. And Jonathan, you've got three of them in your half of the country. Jim with a couple in his half of the country. Jonathan, Sal Frelick, Boston College outfielder. Matt Mikulski, Fordham lefty, and Michael McGreevy, Santa Barbara right-hander, and Jim Bubba Chandler, Georgia high school right-hander / shortstop, and Peyton Stovall, Louisiana high school shortstop. Jonathan, let's start with Sal Frelick.
Yeah, and we've talked a little bit about Frelick, you know, and it's kind of an interesting combination of why he's made a jump. A lot of it has been his performance, and some of it has been the lack of performance of other college players. But, you know, let's focus mostly on what he's been able to do. Boston College, we kind of entered the year as an interesting guy, maybe back into the first round. Maybe he's a comp guy. You know, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he can really hit. You know, as a freshman, he hit 367, stole a bunch of bases. Last year, shortened year, didn't really hit that well, but looked good over the summer in a, you know, kind of local college league, and then in the fall, and has come out and really performed. He's at 360. He's slugged 576. Even though he's not the biggest guy in the world, there is a little bit of extra base pop in his bat. You know, I think he's going to steal some bases. You know, so I think there's, you know, a lot to like with him. And the biggest thing they've shown this year is he's playing center field every day, which he hadn't done before. He had played a corner the first 2 years, just mostly because of personnel. And he's been really good. You know, in the fall, he showed that he had work to do in terms of going back on balls, that not having played a lot in center. And, you know, but scouts also mentioned the fact that he's got plus makeup and that he would work hard enough to get there. And sure enough, he has. And, you know, and now he's kind of moved his way up into top 10 pick, or at least top half of the first round conversations, early yet, I know. But anyone who's going to take him that high believes he can play center field, you know, and I think that he, you know, has a chance to be, you know, a top of the order catalyst, a guy who hits for a lot of average, runs into more than enough balls with that, you know, extra base authority and plays center. He's, you know, he's fiddled around with playing on the dirt, but I don't think a team taking him is going to experiment with him playing shortstop or second base. I think they run him out in center field. You know, and the combination of how well he's hit and the fact that there are a lot of other college bats who really just haven't produced, you know, a big reason why his name has jumped from that sort of back end of the first round to the front end.
Jonathan, if the draft were today, would you take any college hitter over Sal Frelick?
Probably not, with maybe the exception of Adrian Del Castillo at Miami.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
That would probably be, especially if you think Del Castillo can catch.
Well, you know, with Bubba Chandler, I think, you know, obviously there's a fascination with two-way players these days. You know, I think Shohei Ohtani sparked a lot of that. You know, we had Brandon McKay in the draft a few years ago. There have been other guys. You know, I think Bubba Chandler has established himself as the top two-way player in the draft. Now, I think he's going to get drafted and potentially even in the first round as a pitcher. I mean, he was a super athletic, projectable pitcher, was on our top 100 coming into the year. He was at number 69. You know, he was, you know, I think coming into the year, you looked at him as an 88 to 93 mile an hour fastball, mid 70s curveball, had good depth, but not a lot of power to it. You know, the best was yet to come for this guy. Well, it's come the spring, because now he's 92, 97. He still has that really good feel to spin the curveball, but now it's 77, 80. You know, he can even show you a slider that's like 82, 85. He's even using, you know, with that stuff, you don't really need a changeup, but he's showing that he has a changeup. He'll use it against lefties and righties. And, oh, by the way, he's also a shortstop. Switch, you know, we'll make him a switch hitter, you know, because you can't have him just bat one way. So he's a switch hitter. It's power from both sides, but the power comes naturally. He doesn't try to do too much at the plate. He's got good actions at short. He could stay there. He's a 55 runner. You know, it's obviously a strong arm. You know, you could take this guy in the top two or three rounds as a shortstop too. So he just fascinates me. I don't think anybody's going to send him out as a two-way guy because his stuff is so good coming out of his hand this spring on the mound. But he makes you think about it a little bit. He's really, really interesting.
I'm going to stick to college ranks. My next two guys are pitchers. And Matt Mikulski is a really fascinating guy. He actually was draft eligible last year. He snuck in the back end of our draft top 200. He was 199 overall. As a kind of big, strong lefty with some power stuff, who almost definitely looked like a reliever, even though, you know, he had been a starter for Fordham last year, and in, you know, and in 2019 he had been a reliever back in 2018. You know, guy who could throw hard, could miss bats, but there was, you know, a ton of effort with his delivery. He's cleaned some of that up. I think the you know, the big question mark is still whether or not he's going to start, but it's hard to argue with what he's done, especially lately. He has double digit strikeouts in his last five starts. His last two starts, 16 innings, 28 strikeouts, three hits, two walks. You know, may talk a little bit about the level of competition he's facing. He's not pitching in the SEC, but he's kind of doing what, you know, what you would want to see. Now, I don't know how high he goes. He may still top out as maybe a second rounder, but there are not a ton of college lefties in this class, and he's kind of moved up to the close to the front of that list. You know, I think whoever takes him probably sends him out as a starter, see if you can continue to iron out his, iron out his delivery and see if there's enough to get him into a place where he can do it regularly. But this is a guy who's, you know, up to 98 regularly and holding the delivery, holding the velocity rather. And I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, you give him a chance to, start, just because he's still throwing that hard late in his starts. And that's what's been the most encouraging thing for him.
A guy who Jonathan can attest to this. So when we did the top 100 back in November, December, and we're setting that up, I like middle infielders who can hit. And so we jammed a bunch of those guys on the end of the list. I think you had a couple too, Jonathan. And I think literally number 101 on our list, which means he didn't make the list, was Peyton Stovall, who's a shortstop from Houghton High School in Louisiana. And he has just gone off this spring. He's got 12 homers. I mean, I know high school stats don't mean a lot, but, you know, as much as Max Preps tracks national high school stats, he's leading the country in homers. And every scout I talked to about this guy, you know, talks about the fact that this guy, you know, is probably one of the best pure hitters in this draft, especially on the high school side. I mean, he's, you know, he barrels everything. It's a great left-handed swing. I don't think it's a ton of raw power. You know, he's 6 foot, 185. He's strong, but he gets to all of it. It might be solid raw power, but he might get to most or all of it. You know, there is some question, you know, where exactly does he play? You know, he's probably more of a second baseman than a shortstop. You know, it's, you know, not the, you know, it's not a shortstop arm. He's kind of an average runner, but, you know, he can really, really hit. And I think this guy has hit himself. Peyton Stovall has probably hit himself into the top 50 picks in the draft right now. And, you know, just with the performance, how great the swing looks, there's really a lot to like about Peyton Stovall. I got a Steel Walker comp on him in terms of a guy who the rest of the tools aren't real sexy, but he could really hit. That Steel Walker kind of looked like that in high school before going on to be one of the best college hitters at Oklahoma. And I also got and this comp kind of made me open my eyes a little bit because he's a Louisiana sweet swinging infielder who's not a shortstop. Somebody told me, a longtime scout, that he's the best swing in Louisiana for a high school kid since Todd Walker, who didn't have a, you know, great major league career, but he had a long major league career. He was a top 10 overall pick and arguably probably the best second baseman in college baseball history at LSU. So that one really caught my attention when somebody dropped a Todd Walker on him.
Todd Walker could hit, so I get that. I'm going to stick on the mound for the last guy and go to Santa Barbara. Of course, everyone knows that is the old stomping grounds of Shane Bieber. And right now, it sounds to me like Michael McGreevy is going to go ahead of where Shane Bieber went. Bieber was a fourth rounder. You know, was a command guy. The stuff came later. The thing that's allowed McGreevy to kind of jump from being a guy who was not on our top 100 in the fall to maybe a guy who's a second rounder. And we all know college pitchers who perform tend to move up lists. And he has really performed. His freshman year, he pitched out of the bullpen and pitched well. He was in the rotation last year, obviously only made four starts, and was a guy who, kind of like Bieber in college, was a command guy, doesn't walk a lot of guys. Hasn't walked a lot of guys this year. It's been less than a walk per nine innings, but he's struck out over 10 per nine. Everything is kind of ticked up, and he's got that, you know, sort of prototypical projectable body is 6'4", around 200 pounds. So maybe there's even more in the tank, but the fastball has got an up arrow next to it. He's been up to 96, 97. The breaking ball, his slider has gotten better. So this is a guy who's kind of gone off the, you know, from being completely off the radar into that sort of top, you know, two or three rounds. Now, because of the lack of track record, I think people want to see, you know, what he does. His last start wasn't as great. You know, the previous start was a three hit shutout against Hawaii. So I think people will want to see if not just the results, although that's, you know, important, especially for the analytic and data set. But if the stuff holds up over the course of the rest of the spring, then I think we're going to start seeing McGreevy's name continue to creep upwards.
All right. Those are five guys on the rise. Keep an eye out for the top draft prospects list as we expand it from 100 to 150. That's next week. And oh, look, in the mailbag, there's a question about that. We're going to move on to the mailbag and wrap up here. And here's a question that I can answer, which doesn't happen very often. This comes from Jonathan Miller. That's how it's pronounced when it's spelled with an O at the end, right, Jonathan?
Yeah, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole and question that decision. It's not his fault, but go on.
All right. At Jonatho 717-92817 tweets at us, could there be a top 200 MLB pipeline draft list for the season? Indeed, there could be. There will be. We've done a top 200 list for the past, few years. And in fact, this year we're going to do top 250 draft prospects list. So the list currently is 100. We'll expand it to 150 next week. And then about a month later, we'll expand to 200. And about a month later, with the additional time before the draft this year, we're going to expand it to 250. A couple more questions, and these are sort of related. So I'll put them both out there and let you guys have at them. Mike Angels fans or Angels Fins, Angels FNS underscore X3. Who's going to make the biggest jump on the top 100 prospects list in 2021? And a deep thought from Nate Handy here. The Needle 12 is his handle. With the long break between minor league games and such a long time between draft and first pro looks, can we anticipate an unprecedented shakeup in ranks once things get ramped back up?
You know, I think I'll sort of take the biggest jump for it. Actually, I'll take the second question first. You know, I don't know what unprecedented is. You know, like we have to do like
some research there, Jonathan, and figure out the amount of shakeup for each of the last 15 years.
Right, right. We'll have to do a deep analytical dive into that. I think there is going to be a lot of changes because, you know, without having last year, you know, the rankings this year, it was hard to change maybe as much as we would have. So yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of movement, both in the top 100 and the top 30 team lists when we go to re-rank, because they were pretty much static outside of adding in the draftees. You know, we're going to get to see guys go out and play for the first time. So I think all of those things will be important. So I'm going to briefly mention two guys in terms of the biggest jump. One we've talked about, and that's Noel V. Marte. Because I think he's going to go out to full season ball and we're finally going to get to see him play for a lengthy period of time. And I think he is going to hit his way up to a much higher standing, among shortstop prospects and on the top 100 overall. And I think the other guy I'll mention quickly is Quinn Priester, who made a huge jump into the middle of the top 100. But I think, by this time, a year from now or by the end of this year, he'll have pitched his way close to the top of the right-handed pitching prospect list. So those are my two guys. Jim?
Yeah, I was going to say, in terms of the shakeup, I do think there's going to be a lot of movement. I agree with you. I mean, it's not the same, but it's going to be similar to what we're going to see with the draft list when the draft 150 comes out, that you have less to go on players because most guys barely played or didn't play at all last year. And it's just going to lead to a lot of change. And there's going to be guys who emerge who might have emerged last year. So I do think we'll have a lot of shuffling. And, I kind of looked at the who's going to make the biggest jump question two ways. Like guys, maybe in the upper half of the list who could jump near the very top. And for me, that might be, you know, two hitters who I think are on the rise, who didn't get a chance, who were first round picks from 2 years ago or 3 years ago, who didn't get a chance to play last year. And that would be Tristan Casas with the Red Sox, first baseman, and Jordan Groshans, shortstop with the Blue Jays. And then the other way I look at it is guys toward the bottom of the list who could really fly up the list. And there were actually two Mets who jumped out at me for that. There was Matt Allen, who along with Quinn Priester ranked as the best high school pitchers in the 2019 draft. I you know, his stuff has gotten better. I think he could really shoot up. And then I loved Brett Beatty's bat in the 2019 draft, and I'm really anxious to see what he does. If he hits like I think he can, I think Brett Beatty could shoot from toward the bottom of the list to more the middle of the list.
All right. Thanks to Jonathan, Mike, and Nate for their questions. And thanks to everybody for listening. That's a wrap for this week's MLB Pipeline podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next week.